Meeting is being recorded and we have a few minutes to go and then I'll welcome people and introduce Tim. All right, it looks like people are able to enter without us having to...
I've been clicking on them, Mana, and letting them in.
Okay. Can you continue?
Until I share my screen, sure.
Okay, super. All right, and... we'll give it one more minute, then I'll welcome people, and then... Tim Guinea is going to do an introduction, and then we'll go through step by step the basics of what you need to know to be prepared to work a shift or several shifts at Climate Row. And I want to thank, I don't know if he's on yet, but Alan Newman, today we got tables and the giant woodpecker and the duck and lots of other materials. So we'll be ready to set up tomorrow for the fair. There are a few things missing, but overall, I think we're pretty ready. I signed a contract. We got passes. And I think that we're in very good shape. And I welcome everyone. It is now 6:31, and people will be dropping in over the next few minutes. I wish that we had time to go around and introduce ourselves, but what I would like you to do is when you make a comment or ask a question, if you haven't yet introduced yourself, please do, and just say, you know, what climate task force you're working with or what affiliation you have, if any. And it's really encouraging to see that people are taking seriously the need to do a training, and hopefully we can create something that's useful for everyone. And I have to tell it, okay, that the meeting is being recorded. And with that, I think I'd like to get going because we have a lot of material to cover. I'll start. Tim, I'll start admitting people because I'm going to introduce you now and actually ask that you introduce yourself. What I know about Tim is that he is well-trained as a climate reality leader, as well as an actor, and he contributes in many, many ways, and I'm going to let him say a little bit more in that regard. And he's going to start us off by giving an overview about why we're doing this. And then we will go over the nuts and bolts of what you need to know and how you get your passes and all that good stuff. So with that, I'd like to welcome Tim Guiney to do an overview and an introduction, and then we'll go from there. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Manna. So I'm Tim Guiney. As Manna said, I work with former Vice President Al Gore's Climate Reality Project, and I don't want to talk about myself. I want to. What have I done? I want to focus on you guys and thanking all of you for everything you're doing, which is quite extraordinary. We're at quite a moment in the climate crisis, and there's a lot that can be done, and there's a lot of positive stuff that's happening despite how hard things are in the moment. So I'm going to give a really fast overview about why this is urgent work right now. So you guys, this is a photograph from NASA. That thin blue line is actually the Earth's atmosphere. And you know, when you go outside and you look up at the sky, it looks like the sky goes on and on and on forever and ever. And that's actually an optical illusion. The atmosphere is this extraordinarily thin veil around our planet, but it's the veil that makes life possible here. If you had a car that could drive at normal highway speed straight up into the air, in about 5.5-6 minutes, you would break through the troposphere into outer space. It's this incredibly fragile veil. And yet we are putting 175 million tons of global warming pollutants into that thin veil of an atmosphere every 24 hours. And the more of those we add in, the less infrared radiation can get back out into space, which means the planet's warming up. The more intense the global warming concentrations of gases are, the more the temperature is going to go up. So the largest source of global warming pollution, incontrovertibly, is the burning of fossil fuels here, represented in billion metric tons of carbon. If you looked at this graph, kind of right around the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, it just goes up and up and up, with two really interesting exceptions, which have, I'm sure you could probably guess, are the global pandemic and the global financial crisis. But what they say, these exceptions to that ever-climbing norm, is that when we have the will, we can make a difference and we can change what's happening. So the 10 hottest years on record have all been the last 10 years. New York is actually experiencing some of the effects of climate change more profoundly than the rest of the country. Nationally, the average annual temperature is up about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. We're up closer to 2 degrees. We're about 5 degrees warmer than normal in the winter. Last winter was actually the warmest winter on record in New York. In July of 2024, global temperatures reached their highest point for 3 straight days in a row, their highest point in recorded history. Now, a lot of this extra warmth goes into the oceans, about 93%. And as you're probably aware, that warmer ocean temperature creates larger and bigger cyclonic storm systems, which are, you know, hurricanes, typhoons, et cetera. So the risk of a Hurricane Sandy intensity event in New York in 1880 was about 1 in 500 years. By 2017, it was a 1 in 25-year event, and by 2030, on average, once every 5 years, we will see a Hurricane Sandy intensity event if we don't change how much global warming pollutants we're putting into the atmosphere. So warmer air can also hold a lot more water vapor. For every 1 degree Celsius of warming, the atmosphere's capacity to hold water vapor increases by 7%. So there's already between 5 and 15% more water vapor than there was just 50 years ago. And that water vapor can travel great distances. So we see things like this is a climatological event called a microburst. It's also known as a rain bomb or a hail bomb or a snow bomb. It's precipitation in an extremely short window of time. New York has actually seen a 71% increase in these extreme precipitation events since 1958. And that's really, really bad for a state that so much of our economy is based on farms, particularly in the western part of the state. Topsoil, a healthy teaspoon of topsoil contains about 3 billion microorganisms. So those are mycorrhizal fungi and insects and microbial life. So in 3 teaspoons of healthy topsoil, there's more life than all the human beings on the planet. That topsoil gets washed off in these big, big precipitation events. And of course, there's a lot more flooding going on with them. We just saw this terrible business in Texas. I just want to mention that one of the problems is the news media seems incapable of covering more than one climate tragedy at a time. So at the same time we saw all of this happening in Texas, 3 people died in New Mexico, 2 people died in New Jersey. Manhattan saw 3.81 inches of rain in a single hour last week. So depending on where you are, the warmer weather is also increasing drought. In the western United States, there's the worst drought we've seen in 1,200 years. A new study came out this week, says it's not going anywhere for a while. Hotter years typically have more wildfires, and that drought adds to that. I was just in on the fire fields in the Palisades in California, and it is startling, the extent of the damage. We are not immune from this. This is the Minnewaska fire right here in Ulster County, 17,000 acres affected, partly occurring because the southern pine beetle, as its range has extended because things have gotten warmer and warmer, it got north of Albany for the first time about 8 years ago, so we have more fuel, more dead wood in our forests, as well as invasives. So that is additive to the possibility of wildfire here. Of course, even when wildfires are far away, this is the Canadian haze yesterday from an airplane right here in the Hudson Valley. And weirdly and counterintuitively, I've been a firefighter for 23 years, and this kind of blows my mind. What they now believe is that actually the toxicity of smoke is enhanced the further it is from the pyrolytic event. So that what we're breathing here, and this has something to do with sunlight's effects on the molecules as they're coming over, but it gets more and more hazardous. So just very, very quickly, one of the things, of course, that's also happening is we're seeing the melting of the poles of Antarctica and Greenland. This is Arctic sea extent. Over the last 1,500 years, it's fairly consistent until very, very recently. Now, all of the water from that melting ice has to go somewhere. So these are the top 10 cities at risk from sea level rise by 2070. They're looked at by Assets. New York, Newark is number 3. According to the DEC, sea level in New York Harbor is already 15 inches higher than it was just in 1900. There's $129 billion worth of New York City real estate, which is in flood zones right now. And from 2010 to 2020, about 16% of the new multifamily units in New York were built in high-risk flood zones. It's not just New York City, because we know that the Hudson River down from Troy is a tidal estuary. So when you're talking about sea level rise, you've also got to look at what's going to happen in the Hudson. And we know that along the Hudson, it's not just pristine environment. There is a lot of toxic stuff. Here's Indian Point. We know there's still fuel rods there, et cetera. According to the DEC, we could see 71 inches of rise on the Hudson River by the end of this century. So the point that I want to make, that I hope you're getting, is that this is not something that is coming down the pike that the next generation or the generation after is going to have to deal with. This is here with us now. It's a rapidly degrading situation. We should remember Dr. King's words that we are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. This is particularly daunting given what's going on in Washington. We know that the fossil fuel industry spent $445 million in the last election cycle, and they bought a lot of the behavior that we're seeing there. So when the EPA says it's not going to do scientific research on climate change, or the EPA says that it's going to, you know, delay cleanups of toxic coal ash, or I think yesterday Mr. Trump said, which is completely not true, that wind is the most expensive way to generate electricity. It makes sense that those things were bought and paid for by the fossil fuel companies. But I also think it's important to remember that what they bought was also Project 2025. You cannot divorce their lining up these politicians for political success in the election and divorce that from Project 2025. So when we see the degradation of the commons, when we see education being eviscerated, the attacks on our colleges, diversity, equity, and inclusion being attacked, when we see all of those are because of the fossil fuel industry's push on this last election, and we can't forget that. Now, there is actually a lot of really good news, as I said earlier. According to the Yale Climate Opinion Survey in New York, fully 71% of the populace are actively worried about the climate crisis. That is incredible. Nationally, I think it's around 72% of the population now accepts the reality of the climate crisis. We are in the majority. And that's because of work like the work you're going to be doing at the fairgrounds, educating people. That is a big victory. Even if some politicians are ignoring the will of the electorate, the fact that we are building larger and larger support to act on climate because of the work that people like you are doing is extraordinary. Donald Trump has predicated a lot of what he's doing by saying that there is a so-called energy crisis, which is a strange thing, given that the United States currently produces more oil and gas than any nation in the history of mankind. There are 15 states, here's a little good news, that are suing the Trump administration, saying you cannot unilaterally create an executive order saying there is an energy crisis when there's not one, and use that as a predicate for dismantling climate policy. If we want to talk about what a crisis is, it's not the energy crisis. There are 8.7 million people that die from air pollution caused by the burning of fossil fuels every year. That's a crisis. Destroying the climate on which future generations base their ability to live on the planet, as well as plants and animals, that is an emergency. What is not an emergency is simply Mr. Trump not making as much money as he'd like to make all the time. I want to give you a little more good news. July 23rd, the World Court declared that if you're a country and you are not living up to your climate obligations, you are now subject to litigation. In Pakistan, solar energy use has gone from 4 to 14% in just 3 years, and that's without a government mandate. That's without anything like that. That's because it has gotten so inexpensive that average everyday people are spending money to put up solar. In a speech this week, Antonio Guterres, the chief of the United Nations, pushed aside the fact that Trump is lying about fossil fuels, and he said that the transition to cleaner energy is economically inevitable. This is really good news. Of course, we know that technological leaps forward, by the way, also announced in the last couple of weeks, China has an electric vehicle that now can be charged almost fully in 5 minutes. Technological advancements, economic advancements, the world, which is moving forward despite the United States, isn't enough. We need our country to move forward. There are great, extraordinary things that can happen at the state level, at the county level, at the local level, and through business, regardless of what's going on at the federal government. A lot of that has also to do with building education and understanding, which is precisely what you are doing. So if you want to look for some hope, I hope you'll look in the mirror, because where I see hope tonight is getting to see all of your faces. And I am desperately thankful. I know that this is a sort of dark political moment, but I think our resilience, our continuing to move forward, is the thing that is going to eventually win this for our children, for the plants and animals, for the 3 billion life forms in every teaspoon of soil under our feet. So I thank you very much, and thank you, Manna, for your hard work.
And thank you, Tim, for really kicking this off exactly as I had hoped, to inspire everyone to do the best we can and to reach out to some fraction of the 50,000 people that go through the Ulster County Fair over the course of 6 days. And we typically are able to reach about 500. And that's worth doing. I almost didn't try to do Climate Row this year. And then Yvonne and Alex and folks from the New Pulse Climate Task Force were absolutely determined. So here we are, ready to kick it off. Most of the materials are already at our booth, our double booth at the fair, thanks to the help of Alan Newman this afternoon. And a few other people are going to bring some tables. We have, I think, four, and ultimately we're going to need about six. We have all kinds of displays and handouts. And I want to start out with the nuts and bolts about parking and passes and show you a map of the site. Then we'll get back into climate science, climate solutions. What are the fall solutions that we're asking people to sign postcards or petitions to try and prevent, and go over some of the wonderful displays, and then give you some tips of how to engage people. I do want to say that it's very important when you're reaching out to people that are walking past the booth, that if they're kind of looking around and there's a paying vendor on either side or across the aisle, try not to distract them. On the other hand, as they're looking at us and they're at the booth, welcome them, and we'll give you some tips about how to do that. I just want to be sure, we did have a problem one time in the past. This is the fourth year, and one year people were being very aggressive in welcoming people to the Climate Row booth, but it was pulling them away from paying vendors, and the vendors were concerned. So just a note while I think of it. Okay. I want to ask Alex, who's our keeping track of the scheduling and the passes and parking and the bus schedule, et cetera, just to say a few words about passes. And then also, while I think of it, we're short on tarps. And we put a tarp under each of the tables so that if people put their belongings under the table, it doesn't wick up moisture. And then at the end of the day, we cover each of the tables with a tarp and put a folding chair, because you can get some pretty rough weather at night. They do put the sides of the tents down every night and we roll them up every morning. But it is important to protect the displays, and we'll make sure everybody knows how to do that. Okay, Alex, what about passes and parking?
Sure. So I am still hearing back about any parking passes, but as far as passes to get into the fair, they will be ready. Well, they'll be ready for everybody at the main ticketing booth tomorrow. And then we'll be taking like half of them to the booth ourselves. So for those of you who signed up for multiple shifts, we're asking for you to take your second, third, fourth, you know, days that you're doing them, the tickets for those from the Climate Row booth. But for your first shift, you'll just go to the main ticketing booth, and it's the far window, all the way as you're like facing the ticketing booth. It's the one on the left. Those of you who've done this in the past, like me, probably have done this before. And they have a list of everyone's names and the date that you're set to volunteer, and you should be all set. And I'm going to make sure I put my contact info in the chat. If any scheduling issues do come up, you know, I'm right here and, on my devices all the time. Yeah, parking is free. But the parking passes, to get closer, you know, I haven't heard back about that yet. And yeah, I'll put my contact in the chat, although I think most of you have communicated with me. And I'll also put some information about UCAT for those who might be taking the bus to get over there as well, or to share with friends and neighbors. And the last thing I wanted to say about the schedule is we are still a bit there for the Saturday evening shift. So anyone who might have a friend, neighbor, colleague, you know, that you can convince to get involved, I'll share the sign-up link that you all use to sign up for your shifts in the chat in a moment as well.
Excellent.
It turns out that I went to sign the contract today. Half of the passes will be at the volunteer booth, and right now I have the other half, and I'll be there tomorrow morning up till it opens. So we're going to have a little drawer to put the passes in. Only take what you need, and we'll be checking. And if the passes run low, I'll purchase more and get reimbursed by the county. But the other thing we found out is that there are only 2 parking passes, which allow you to park at the pool and walk in. But that doesn't really matter because the parking is free. There's a very large parking lot across from the fair, and that's where the booth where you get your passes for the first time is. So you would park in the free public parking, go over to the ticket booth, and go to the volunteer ticket booth, which is all the way to the left, get your pass, and come in the main gate. If you park by the pool and you have a pass already, you can go in the back gate. But they may be very strict about who is able to park in the pool. If we can share the parking passes, we will, but we only got 2 of them. Any questions about parking passes? And there's also a bus schedule, which is on the list that I sent around, that if you click on the links, it gives you the details of each of the displays and handouts and so forth. And I will put that link in the list and also send it around later tonight. I would encourage you, we're not going to have time to go through everything, but we'll click on a few things just so you can see what is available. Basically, there are, and while I think of it, if I didn't mention it before, yeah, I think I did, tarps. If anybody can drop off a clean folded tarp, tomorrow morning, we have a few, and I'll pick up a few more. Okay.
Can I mention some things about parking before we continue?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there is a shuttle also that, if you're having trouble walking over to the fair, does stop in that public parking lot. You just have to catch it at the right time, and it takes you to the front of the fair. But also wanted to point out the entrance and exit times, to plan extra time before your shift to get in up to the fair, and then expect, especially at the night shift, to be stuck a little bit in traffic leaving the fair. I do see a few people who have been there in previous years, but I do want to give that context because that one road gets very clogged up, and sometimes they shut one direction, and you can be stuck for a bit.
Yes, so try to arrive with enough time so that you can use that 15 minutes early to find the booth and get oriented by this the person or people that staffed it before. All right, let's see. Any other questions on passes and parking?
Okay.
All right. Let's see what we have here. I was going to share my screen. And where is that little thing? Oh, dear. Not coming up. Oh, there it is. Okay. Share. And here's the schedule. Where is the schedule? Share. Let's see. All right. And just click. And again, we're going to send this around. Oh. And my mouse is absolutely not cooperating. There we go. Just a quick look at the schedule. And if anybody else wants to help set up, we have a few people. We're going to get there at 10 in the morning and probably take most of the time till the fair opens at 4. And then you can see that the one area where we don't have anyone is Saturday evening from 6 to 10. And actually, Saturday, the fair is open to 11, but you can shut down at 10. And okay, so the other thing I was going to say in that regard is let me admit and stop sharing for a moment. We'll be sharing again.
Thursday morning would be okay.
Yeah. Okay, thought went right out of my mind, but let's keep going. Cause
it sounds like Nora Hammond has their hand up.
Yeah, we just wanted to know if Thursday morning works for us, because we notice it's very filled. It's Nora Hammond along the
line. I'm sorry. Alex, can you help them with their question about Thursday morning?
Yeah, let's get you signed up for Thursday morning. Nora, is it just you or?
Yeah, you and Eugene.
Cool.
Yeah, we didn't realize people had already signed up for times.
Oh, yeah. I did put the sign up link in the chat, which might be the easiest way, and then I'll keep doing what I've been doing, like filling in on the schedule for you, or we could sidebar and I can get you in there.
Just give the time we should arrive. The Thursday morning is from 10 till 2?
Yeah, so if you're 9:30, that'll give you enough time to get parked, get your ticket, and get over to the booth.
Can you put that schedule up again, please? Can you? I wasn't sure I saw myself.
I think, Jean, I think you might need to mute somebody. We heard some background noise. Unless you had a question.
Can you put the schedule up again, please? I didn't think I saw myself.
Yes, I can put that schedule back up. When did you say you were going to work?
I think Sunday morning.
Oh, I realize I opened it, but I didn't share my screen.
If you can just look at it, make sure that I'm there.
Yes, you are for Sunday morning. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me get back here and be sure. Okay, we talked about passes. I'll put the link in the chat for the site map, TARPS, and climate science and climate solutions. In terms of climate solutions, and I ask that you, if somebody can put the link to the whole spreadsheet in the chat. I can't talk and put things in the chat at the same time. But in terms of climate solutions, there is a handout and a display of the drawdown climate solutions, which were created by a team of 90 scientists and are still very relevant. And then we also have a little palm card that on one side says what adults can do and on the other side says what kids can do. And speaking of what kids can do, we have two games that we're going to make available. The first is building greenhouse gas molecules using candy and toothpicks. And Joe Londa, I don't know if Joe's on the call. I didn't see him, but we've been using that game, and it's pretty popular, and it also gets people to come into the booth. And then we also have a big kind of wheel of fortune that we got from the Hudson River Maritime Museum, And when you spin the wheel, it ends up giving you coins, and you can put those coins on a scale. And I think it's the green coins solve the climate crisis, and the beans make the climate crisis work. And what you want to try to do is get the scale in balance, because that's what we're trying to do, is get our climate back into balance. So that's, we also have information on solar mapping, and we will be doing a training sometime this fall. We don't have dates yet, but we can sign people up and get ready. What the 70 by 30 Renewable Energy Working Group is working on, big displays about that. And also new now this year, well, we have the executive order on climate change, which was Jen Metzger's first executive order, but we now have a list of all the things that Ulster County as a county is doing to promote climate solutions, and it's extensive and very valuable. Okay, let's see. The other thing that is new this year that we really haven't focused on before are things that are not climate solutions, that are false solutions. And unfortunately, even though, and by the way, Jen Metzger was one of the primary authors of New York's community protection and CLCPA, Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the climate law for New York, which says we'll achieve 70% renewable energy with storage and efficiency by 2030. And we have lots of information and displays on that. And we were making progress, but in my opinion, the governor was not doing what she needed to do to get the state agencies that could make this happen, to activate them. And then in September, she announced that it wasn't really working, and instead of renewables with storage and efficiency, we're going to have to resort to nuclear. And over the course of the almost year since then, she has not only announced a very specific initiative, but is looking for sites and so forth. And there are a lot of very good reasons why nuclear is not a climate solution. And they are all listed in the literature and the handouts and the petitions that will be available. One of them is really beautiful. It's a painting of that portion of the Hudson River with Indian Point shown and crossed out. And we were able to get Indian Point closed, but they are looking for sites for so-called small modular nuclear reactors, and we have really good information on why they are not a good solution. And also to extend the aging nuclear reactors in Western New York, on Lake Ontario and so forth. And that's a very unfortunate false solution. The other major false solution is extending pipelines that we stopped, the Constitution Pipeline and other pipelines, and there's pressure to extend those pipelines and keep our reliance on fossil fuels. So you'll have time to, between now and your shift, click on those links and read more about it. But you'll also have time there to really get familiar, because there are displays and very clear handouts. But any preparation you can do ahead of time will be very useful as well. All right. and we need questions on that. False solutions are nuclear pipelines, and there's one other that is questionable, and I'm trying to sort it out, and that is there's a push for hydrogen, but hydrogen is often, when it's used as a storage, that will end up being in a hydrogen fuel cell or so forth, it often takes fossil fuel or nuclear to create that hydrogen. And so we want to be sure that it's not ending up in the net making things worse. And the one other thing I want to say about nuclear is that there's a huge amount of fossil fuel that goes into the mining, the milling, the transportation, the processing, to say nothing of the high-level nuclear waste that every single form of nuclear creates. And it's slow, extremely slow, and extremely expensive, by far the most expensive solution. It's not ready.
Excuse me.
The others are. Okay, any questions on that? All right. Let me just see. The other thing is we have the giant woodpecker. And at this point, two displays to explain why we have a giant woodpecker and a giant duck, because birds are amongst the animals most seriously affected by climate change. And so that'll be, those will be explained well in the displays, and people love to come into the booth and get their picture taken with the giant woodpecker. That's a big draw. I want to see what else. Let me just, I'm sorry, keep my sharing on, screen share, and see if, let me see that. All right, well, that's the giant woodpecker, but that was not what I meant to open, so stop share. See if I can find. Nope. All right. I am not very good at screen sharing, but you can click on the links. Was somebody able to find the link for all the other links and put in? I see the schedule is in the chat and the sign up link is in the chat, but there is one other link that I should have had ready, and that's where all of these are, and if I can find it and click on them, we can share that. Now. But go ahead.
The displays and handouts in the chat.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure, you know, this is not my forte, but let me just see if there's anything else I can find that will be helpful. That one I already. All right, this is exactly what I was talking about. And now I have to just one more screen share and we should, I don't know why they put the screen share button so far over. Here it is. Okay, this one. All right, can you guys see that? It starts with the map of the fairgrounds, and I guess it's not letting me click on them to show you, but you'll all have a copy of this, and I'll, before we go, put it in the chat. It shows the map of the fairgrounds, and then the Audubon bird poster. We talked about the climate law. We talked about No, we haven't yet talked about, there is a map of all the local climate smart committees and task force in Ulster County. It's a very good way to draw people in. As somebody walks by, you might ask them where they live and walk them over to the map and see if their community already has a climate smart task force, and if they seem interested, help them to get in touch. I mentioned Drawdown Climate Solutions. We have a dollhouse that has examples of energy efficiency and with mini splits and solar and everything, and that is already ready to put up. Unfortunately, many of the incentives that are listed to make these improvements are going to be defunded. And I think it's important that people know that.
Can I say something quick about that? On behalf of NYCP, New Yorkers Reclaim Power, we just want to stress at the fair that electric vehicle incentives are going to be going away in September, and other incentives for home heat pumps and electrification are going away in end of this year. So we have a couple months for people to take advantage of these incentives from the Inflation Reduction Act, and that house should have like a QR code from Rewiring America with some helpful information for people. But we'll also have these like quarter pages at the table for people to grab to sign up for a clean energy coaching session with NYCP. And our coaches, it's a free service. They'll answer any questions anybody has. And also, if they qualify to get connected to the Clean Energy Hub, if they're low-income folks, they'll be forwarded to the local Clean Energy Hub. So just want to stress that the last couple of months of these incentives are something we want to, as at least the nonprofits participating are going to be plugging at the fair.
I'm sorry?
I was just saying that the dollhouse is the main thing the nonprofits want to plug at the fair, of taking advantage of the incentives that are still there for a couple more months.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Yes, indeed. And then there is a PowerPoint. This will not be shown at the fair, but the greenhouse gas PowerPoint is part of the greenhouse gas molecule activity. So please do click on that link. And there is also a handout about glaciers and sea level rise here in the Hudson Valley. I think I've mentioned everything else, but one thing I didn't mention is there's a crossword puzzle. And if people fill out the little crossword puzzle about climate change and climate solutions, they get a raffle ticket. And that raffle ticket is for an induction burner that is very highly energy efficient. And I have been cooking with one burner and really making do. So an induction burner is a really nice prize. We're not doing the extensive raffles that we have done in the past. And I think the nuclear is not a climate solution is really critical. If you only look at one thing, please familiarize yourself with that. And then there is something from Food and Water Watch on false climate solutions. And I mentioned the five things we can do, what Ulster County is doing, the pipelines. There's also a bill to end the 100-foot rule, and there's a postcard that goes with that. And we'll be saving those postcards and sending them back to New Yorkers for Clean Power, and they will deliver them to the governor. The postcards about nuclear are 40 cents because of their oversized. So we are going to ask people to, we'll have a donation jar to help pay for the stamps. If people want to take it home and mail it, they can, but, and I'll provide some stamps, but it'll tend to end up on their dresser or bureau and they'll forget. So it's better if we mail them. But if they want to take it, they can. We found the banners that announce that this is Climate Row and what they can learn here. And we could use one or two more folding tables. I mentioned the tarps. We have the woodpecker, and we even have snacks now, thanks to Alan. great. And I think, we'll be sending around or adding to this list the link for the Ulster County Area Transit has a bus that leaves from New Paltz and ends up, and I believe it's from Stewart's in New Paltz, and ends up right at the Ulster County Fair. It's the bus for the pool, but people can use that. So if you don't want to drive and you want or are able to take a bus out there, it's also very helpful for people that don't have their own transportation or people, for example, that are coming up from the city and taking a train or a bus and ending up in New Paltz. If it's a train, they have to take an extra bus, but New Paltz is kind of a hub in that part of the county, so they can take public transportation to the fair. And I think that just about covers it. I'm going to stop sharing one more time and just see if I pulled up some things I wanted to share.
Had something to share or ask.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, so sorry. I was actually going to take myself off stack, but I wanted to just mention that the county executive Metzger had an op-ed in the Times Union 6 days ago for folks who hadn't seen about the federal cuts. And she and Assemblymember Shrestha had a call last week on the federal cuts and things that state lawmakers can do to make sure that we can backfill these cuts, including small taxes on the wealthiest corporations and individuals in the state, and that we want to make sure that our representatives know about that. So definitely recommend folks check that out, and I'll post the link in the chat.
Okay, and my computer is doing something extremely weird. Fortunately, I'm also on here on my cell phone. We can continue despite the fact that my computer, my desktop is crashing. it'll come back. So at this point, I've done a lot of talking, a lot of the overview. I will make sure that everyone on this call, Alex, if I could ask you to just make a note of everyone who's on the call, and in case there are people on the call that we don't already have on our list. And thank you. And I think we want to pause now and just see what questions or suggestions people may have. And again, our gratitude for your willingness to help with this. I think it's very timely, very necessary, and is going to be very helpful. Any suggestions, any ideas, any questions?
I'm sorry, I can't find the button for raise your hand. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm Jean Lerner. I just want to say Tim's presentation was very good, but I had to make a correction because if we're going to be talking to people about this, the sea level is not going up because of the melting of the Arctic sea ice. That's like an ice cube in your glass. It doesn't change the sea level. The sea level is going up because of thermal expansion, the heating of the water, and the Greenland glaciers and other glaciers. Antarctica isn't really melting too much right now, but anyhow, so it's not the sea ice. The sea ice is a whole other issue. It's a very big deal, but that's not why the sea level is going up.
But I think the point is that sea level is rising.
Yes, absolutely. But that's you just don't want to give people misinformation.
Okay. I want to just make it very clear that for those of us in the Hudson Valley, and we experienced this, I don't remember whether it was Hurricane Irene or which one it was, but we had an 11-foot storm surge, and I was still working for Clearwater at the time, and Clearwater and Riverkeeper called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and as that storm was worsening and these storm surges were occurring, we suggested that there be a safe shutdown rather than an emergency shutdown, which is called a SCRAM. And the NRC rule was, no, it had to be 15 feet, and it was only an 11-foot storm surge. But they did not shut Indian Point down. And then because of other outages in New York City, there was an emergency SCRAM. But up and down the Hudson River, a lot of toxic material from old coal-burning plants and many other, dumps that were along the shores of the Hudson that are now closed and capped. And that's fine without sea level rise. But when you have sea level rise with storm surges, those protective mechanisms are going to break through, and the toxic material that is buried and covered will end up being released. So that is one of the things. When I lived with a family that had two young children and heard us talking about climate change, and they were kind of scared. And so they said, what can we do? And I said, well, we'll move to a high place and get a boat. And that became kind of the, anytime climate change came up, the refrain was move to a high place and get a boat. But it's not something to joke about. It's extremely serious. And the solutions all take place at the local level. And that's why I'm so proud of this brain trust that is working on trying to create an energy park and an energy corridor in New Paltz as a model, where we install renewables with storage and efficiency, including at the Government Operations Center, all the way from the high school to the landfill. And that can generate as much as 20 megawatts, not kilowatts, but megawatts of clean, renewable energy. But it's not enough to plan or talk or take the solar mapping. Those are all good. But what we need to get to is actual implementation. So we're trying to figure out how to do that. And thank you to the folks from New Pulse for your help with that. All right, my computer is back on. But at this point, I just want to focus on making sure that this training is valuable to each of you. And if you have questions or suggestions or good ideas, let's share them before we break. And I see a hand, another hand from Melissa.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to remind us that this is a fair crowd, and you're going to get a lot of youth and families, and we do have a lot of displays and information. But just really, like, feel out the dialogue that you're having with people. And if they want to play the games, you know, maybe the parents are reading something while the kid is interacting and you're planting a seed unknowingly, but don't have that pressure to go over all of the materials that we have out or know everything. And then I also want to just give a heads up that sometimes at the fair there can be there's actually a Trump booth selling, like, Trump merchandise pretty much every year from what I remember, and some climate deniers. And I usually tell people when I'm tabling to just disengage, you know, if you feel unsafe or if someone's trying to really, like, go back and forth with you about something, it's not worth, you know, things escalating. So I do want to give that forewarning message, because there are some people that just, they're not even trying to listen to what you have to say. They just want to yell. So just wanted to say that.
Yeah. And do not engage in trying to change their mind. You know, just let them finish and they'll move on if you don't engage with them. And I think that's the best way to handle that. But by and large, we find that people are engaged. Different things cause them to pause and interact with us. But I also find that people are very inclined, if the graphics are good and we have some wonderful displays, they'll educate themselves. They'll stand there and read about climate change or draw down climate solutions, et cetera. Don't overwhelm people with handouts, but if there is something they're interested in, by all means, share it. And I think the one thing we want to encourage is if people are interested in taking a solar mapping training, let's get them to sign up. And beyond that, we have, as I said, petitions and postcards. And I would say this is the most sort of radical climate row that we've had, because the information is coming from the groups that are actively working on it, you know, Food and Water Watch and Sierra Club, et cetera. New Yorkers for Clean Power. So we have, and also the situation is worse than it has been, both in terms of climate change, what's going on in Washington, revoking protections and incentives, and the fact that the governor of New York is promoting New York to be the center for AI, cryptocurrency, highly energy intensive industries that would be powered by nuclear. And that's really, if there's ever an example of a false solution, that is one. I may catch some feedback from the powers that be, but oh, there's one other thing we are going to include, and that is from Sarah Hanna's office, information on the Hudson Valley energy transition, which is asking or creating a shift where Central Hudson would become a public authority, so that the profit motive is not what underscores all the decisions. That said, there are staff at Central Hudson that we're already working with that are being very helpful and cooperative. And Sarah Hanna's proposed legislation really protects the staff, wants to keep them functioning and intact, but to change the overall structure so that instead of it being owned by Fortis, and the main motive is the profit motive for their shareholders, that it would be owned as a public authority with hopefully a wisely appointed board of directors and a lot of public input and goals to keep the prices down and maximize the climate solutions that are available, including grid upgrades. So, okay, who else has an idea or a thought that would be valuable to share with others on the call? Well, maybe we've been on the call for a little over an hour. I want to stress that if you need to change your shift, or when you go on and see a blank shift that you could fill, please notify Alex directly and CC me. She is coordinating the the list of volunteers, making sure the fair knows who to let in, and we'll also keep track of, if we start using up the 24 passes that they've already given us. And by the way, if somebody wants to get a pass ahead of time, I'll keep a couple with me. If you're in the neighborhood of Rosendale, just to be sure that, but it's really not a big deal. If you leave enough time, park in the big parking lot, go to the volunteer booth and pick up your passes. It's very easy. They don't give you a hard time at all. Okay. And I can stay on if somebody, has a question that doesn't involve the whole group. Hold on one second. Did you put your contact information in the chat? Okay. All right. And by the way, I think everybody has my contact information. Keep it with you, because a question may arise or a situation may arise that you want to have somebody to call. And I will take a call day or night when I'm not there. And I will also try and make sure you know how to open up and close down. And the only exception, the fair is open from 10 to 10 for 5 of those 6 days. The first day they open at 4. But on the weekend, they're open till 11. And you're perfectly welcome to shut down at 10 and, leave at 10:30. Thank you. Bring it in here, Deb. I just want to show people. Let's see if we can, not a lot of light, but here. Yeah. Deb just made a beautiful display on birds and climate. So thank you. And this is the kind of participation and support we've had from day one when Alex and Yvonne said, yes, we are going to do Climate Row this year. Okay. Kristen, go ahead.
Nana, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to say that in the past, if you were there first thing in the morning before the fair opened, you didn't need a pass. They would let you through. So that might save some passes?
So if you get there, say, at 9:30 and the fair doesn't open until 10, and you're just going to your booth, they will. And that way we can make the passes stretch further. But we will keep track over the course of the week. And if we start getting low, I'll purchase another 10 passes. And the passes, by the way, let you in. And then you can see the various, the animals, you know, all the displays. And it's a wonderful event, but it does not include the rides. And I want to be sure everyone brings water. We will have a cooler with ice in it and unfortunately, plastic water bottles. Deb would have my head, but she left. we're trying not to use plastic, but I happen to have a case of plastic water bottles that I will keep chilled because it's going to be warm. Kristen, your hand's still up. Did you have something more?
Sorry, no, that's it.
Can't quite hear you now. But, okay,
she
you're
said
on
no.
mute.
I think Teddy was going to say something before.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add, Matta, you already did a great job describing the Hudson Valley Power Authority, which is Sarah Hanna's legislation to make Central Hudson a public utility that wouldn't be for profit. And yeah, you know, it's a large bill. It's 65 pages long. So, you know, you don't have to know every single thing about it. But what Manna said about, you know, we want to keep the workers and keep the experts, but we also want to keep the profits that are going out the door that can go to making our grid more efficient, maybe go to lowering our bills potentially. And also we want to have oversight over our energy system. You know, as we go into climate change with energy supplies being volatile, we want to have some kind of democratic control, you know, say over those resources, and that it's not just up to a private company that has a monopoly over the area. And we're very, I'm sorry to not introduce myself. My name's Teddy. I'm the Director of Community Affairs for Sarah Hanna's office. And we're just really looking forward to being at the fair with everyone. That's all. Thanks so much for the time, Anna.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And I just want to point out, in case anyone asks, that Ulster County has not taken a position, but those of us who are actively working with Central Hudson on that New Paltz project all believe that if our utility is a public authority, that climate solutions will be implemented more readily because the profit motive is taken out of the equation. And renewables are the least expensive, the most readily available. And if people have questions about storage, there are absolutely good advice, and we can set up a webinar with people from, I think it's New York State DEC, has someone who's an expert on ensuring safety for battery storage facilities, of which there are two now proposed here in Ulster County. But we're also going to be getting people from all around the region, and hopefully some of them will go home and say, well, in Ulster County, they have EV charging stations, and they have, you know, various other incentives that are going to be listed on what Ulster County is doing to promote climate solutions. So thank you each for your participation. And Alex and I are a phone call away if you need anything. Oh, and one other thing I want to suggest is that think of one other person you'd like to spend 4 hours at the fair with. We will get you passes, but there are a few shifts where there's only one person signed up, and it's a lot going on for one person to handle. So if you can think of a partner that you'd like to invite, this meeting, this training is recorded. And again, you know, we have wonderful, a very inclusive list where you can click on a link and read about any of the things I've described, whether it be identifying the problem or promoting climate solutions and all the activities that go with that. June, did I see your hand up? No. Okay. All right. Anybody else? I want to be sure that everyone feels comfortable moving forward, coming for your shift, getting there early if you're, especially if you're first thing in the morning, and closing down at night. The only thing of real value is the raffle prize. And I don't know how, what the value is, but in the past, we've had a whole array of raffle items. And some of them were wine and champagne and things that needed to be taken to a safe place, which was Cornell Cooperative Extension, overnight, because if they were left out, they might disappear. I think the only thing that we have this year of that nature is the induction burner. And I think if we just put that into, we'll have lots of containers that you can just slip it into, so it's not sitting on the table, visible and tempting. But other than that, closing down is simply finding the tarp that's folded under each of the tables and as best you can stretch it. If you have displays that are upright, it's probably easiest just to leave them. If they seem a little like they might be falling down, then close them down, fold them up, and we'll set them up the next morning, and I'll be sure that people know how to do that. All right. Going once. Let's see. I have to run. Thank you all. See you at the fair. Okay. Thank you, Teddy. And anybody else? One last. Going once, going twice. All right. Thank you all. You have our numbers. Please take a few minutes and go through the list with all the links on it, and I'll make sure to send that around as a reminder so that when you're, you know, trying to staff, you've already read the information ahead of time before you get there. And John, we need to be there at 10 a.m., so get to sleep early. I'll call you.
I'll see you all tomorrow or later in the week. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you, everyone.